I'm very happy now to welcome Sichuan Siv. He is former ambassador to the United Nations, former White House deputy assistant under George H.W. Bush. He's the author of several books, including Golden Bones, and his new novel is called Golden State. He will be speaking and signing books on Tuesday, the 1st of July, at Collected Works Bookstore, thanks to Journey Santa Fe. Welcome to the Radio Cafe.
Thank you.
So you have told this story many times. You were the only member of your family to survive the Khmer Rouge in Cambodia. You landed in the United States in 1976. Why was your family in particular targeted?
Well, when the Khmer Rouge came to power in 1975, they turned the Cambodian society upside down, so they killed anybody who wore glasses because it's a sign of education. They killed teachers, nurses, government officials, military personnel, and anybody who had not been with them during the so-called revolution. And my family was a target because first I worked for an American organization called CARE. I spoke English. I spoke French. I wore glasses. I was the only person in my family to have gone to college. And my mother thought I was in danger, so she asked me to leave. She gave me her wedding ring, a scarf, and a bag of rice. So I rode a bicycle for 3 weeks crossing Cambodia before I was captured near the Thai border. So they killed anybody who had not been with them during their war revolution. And we were all victims of this crazy revolution.
And it is a terrible story that would be a crazy adventure if it were not true, but the fact that you survived it is unbelievable. You threw away your glasses so that they wouldn't have that against you, and you went through labor camps and all sorts of things. How did you finally get out of the country and get to the United States?
Well, first, when I was a child, my mother told me to never give up hope, no matter what happened. So those were her last words when I departed from Cambodia, from her, in 1975. She told me to run, and no matter what happens, never give up hope. So hope kept me alive for 1 year under the Khmer Rouge, where we worked 18 hours a day. We were given a meal. Not really a meal, a bowl of rancid soup a day to eat. And at night, I never knew if I would be alive the following morning. But I, when I woke up, I told myself that I would make it to freedom. So when I had a chance to escape, it was February 1976. I was alone at the back of the timber truck. So I jumped off that truck, and I began to walk and crawl and run and swim for 3 days, having nothing to eat or to drink in the jungle. I fell in a booby trap, which is a deep hole full of sharp bamboo sticks. I was severely wounded, but I got out alive, and I began to limp along until I got to Thailand. In Thailand, I was jailed for illegal entry. Then they realized that I was an innocent refugee, so they put me in a refugee camp. That's when I applied to come to the United States.
And you were successful, and you landed in Connecticut. How did you get placed there and with that particular family that you lived with?
Well, when I was working for CARE, a woman who was my supervisor named June McNally, she went to school in Vermont with these people, Nancy Charles. So when she knew that I was able to escape from Cambodia to Thailand, she wrote, she contacted her friends in Connecticut and asked them to sponsor me. So I did not know anybody. I did not know a single human being in the United States, not even the family I was going to live with. When I arrived in Connecticut on June 4th, 1976, 1 month before the bicentennial, I arrived with my mother's scarf, an empty rice bag, and $2. So I picked apples in Connecticut. I drove a taxi in New York, and I continued to do everything that came my way to the best of my ability. And 13 years later, I went to work at the White House with George H.W. Bush.
How did you enter the world of politics and government?
When I arrived in 76, I was watching the conventions on TV. At that time, it was Jimmy Carter and Gerald Ford. I did not understand anything, and my host family told me that these are conventions and these are delegates. They're going to choose two people. They're going to elect one of them to be the next president. And they turned to me, they said, "Sichuan, if you wanted to understand this country, you should get involved." So my chance to get involved was in 1988. My wife Martha and I were living in New York, and I decided to volunteer for George Bush, the vice president. When he got elected, he asked me to go and work for him at the White House. And this is really pure luck, because there are hundreds and thousands of people who volunteer in a presidential campaign, and I was among the lucky few.
How did your experience as a Cambodian affect your feelings about the American political parties?
Well, when I arrived in America, I just escaped from a communist dictatorial, tyrannical regime, so I was determined to, I was anti-communist when I arrived here, and I just felt that I should be on my own feet to be self-independent and so on and so forth. When I became a U.S. citizen, I became a Republican in 1982.
How did you come to write your first book, the memoir about all of this, and what was that experience like?
It was very tough, because it took me like 30 years to write Golden Bones. After I arrived in 1976, each time I introduced myself, people asked me, "When are you going to write a book?" And I was very, very, very reluctant at the beginning, because I knew I would have to go through a lot of painful memories. My mother, my sister, my brother, and all their children, 15 of them were killed. And my friends, my neighbors, and some 2 million people died under the Khmer Rouge. But when I travel around the country and around the world, the question persisted, when are you going to write a book? So finally, when my wife, Martha, bought me a laptop in 2006, I decided to put pen to paper. And when I decided to type, amazingly enough, the words just came out, just like you turn on the faucet, the water just came through, and it took me only 7 months to finish the first draft.
The book contains some old family photographs from the early 70s. How did these pictures survive?
It's a very good question. I did not have any photos of myself or my family before 1976, before I arrived in America. Everything was destroyed, and besides, I didn't want to carry anything that would give me away. But a friend of mine who was a Singapore ambassador to Cambodia happened to be at a wedding of my younger sister, and he had some of those pictures. So when I saw him after I arrived in America, he asked me, "Do you have any pictures of your family?" And I said, "No." He said, "I had some of your family at that wedding. And the other photos were given to me by friends. But I did not have anything. I don't have anything, just memories of my mother and my sister and my brother."
We're talking to former ambassador to the United Nations, Sichuan Siv. Now, I mean, many of us talk about trauma, but most of us have not known and will never know the kind of traumatic experiences you had and the losses that you suffered and the aloneness that you experienced. Once you were safe, once you were in the United States and living a life and having a job and getting married and all those things, how did you deal with it? Where did you put that? And what is it like for you now?
Well, the challenges for refugees or immigrants to a new country, the first one would be language. I was fortunate because I spoke English already. Before I came here, I worked for an American organization. By the way, I was supposed to be airlifted out of Cambodia by the U.S. Embassy, but I missed the helicopter by 30 minutes. So I had sort of a head start in a way because I spoke English. The second thing, my mother's words stay with me all the time. She said, even in the very difficult circumstances, no matter what happens, never give up hope. So I sort of put the painful past beside me and try to focus on the future, try to build a new life. That's why I did everything that came my way to the best of my ability, from picking apples to driving a taxi to working all the way to the White House. So it's a combination of luck and fate. And that's what makes America so great, because you put your mind on something, you work hard for it, chances that you'll be successful. And hope kept me alive through the Khmer Rouge, brought me through the jungle of Cambodia to Thailand and to the United States and always to the White House.
What is your perspective on the young people right now who are leaving countries like Honduras, where there's so much violence and killing going on, trying to unite, for example, with their families here in the United States or get to safety?
Well, first, for young people in general, not those in Honduras, even in America or elsewhere, the first they need to realize that they are so blessed and so lucky to be Americans, to be living here, and not to take anything for granted. For those who try to escape the tyranny and be reunited legally to their families here, they should be welcome, because that's what makes America strong. It's ethnic diversity. I emphasize the word legally because it has to be legal. The strength, the unique strength of America is that we came from many to become one, a pluribus unum. I once spoke at Yale last year, and the students asked me, what is the message that you want to leave with us? And I said to never give up hope, no matter what happens. And they said that, well, that's your mother's wisdom, but what is yours? So I came up with this. I said, be well, be wise, be worthy. Be flexible and able to adapt to difficult circumstances. Follow your passion. When you do well, don't forget to do good. And that would apply to anybody in the younger generation, especially anywhere, whether it's Honduras or Guatemala or in Asia, in Africa.
We're talking to Ambassador Sichuan Siv. Now, when did you first return to Cambodia?
I went back in 1992, in March 1992. I was at the White House, and we just finished a lengthy peace process on Cambodia, co-sponsored by France and Indonesia. I went there to Paris in 1989 with Secretary of State James Baker, and I went back in 1991 when he signed a peace agreement. The United States played a key role in this process, so we thought that we would send a delegation to Cambodia to look at the preparation on the ground, because the United Nations was going to send the largest peacekeeping operations in history. Some 22,000 people, costing nearly $2 billion to stabilize the country and to try to organize an election. So So I went with the State Department asked me, and my superiors let me go. So I went there as part of the U.S. delegation. It was quite an emotional return because I escaped from Cambodia on foot, running across the jungle, and then in March 92, I was returning to Cambodia as a deputy assistant to the President of the United States in a U.S. government aircraft. So it was just a big gap between those times. And I did not know how I would take it when I saw Cambodia. Incidentally, my village where I was born was just less than a mile from the terminal, and I did not recognize anything. It took me a long time to to have something sort of sink in. And then I remember where my school was, childhood friends and so on and so forth, and my high school was still there. So the memory started to come back after a few hours, almost the whole day.
Have you gone back regularly since then? Do you have any friends and at least distant family or anybody who is still there?
Yes, my wife tried to go there as much as soon as we as often as it can, at least probably once a year if you could. I still have some friends there, childhood friends. Some of them are in government positions, and many of them I was killed. But a few managed to survive and have succeeded in life. I think there are like three or four of them who are now in the government, and we were happy to see each other. But very sadly, most of my friends from childhood until adulthood have perished under the Khmer Rouge.
Your family is Buddhist, and you wrote once that your mother said that you all must have done terrible things in other lives to be suffering the way you were suffering under the Khmer Rouge. What were at the time and what are now your feelings about that?
Well, in Buddhism, there is a principle of karma, which is sort of the result of your action in the past. Where you done something badly, you would suffer later on. That was when the Khmer Rouge, after the Khmer Rouge came, and my mother thought that it was something that we did very badly. But I sort of encouraged her. I told her that the whole country was going through this, so it was not really that karma principle. I'm still a Buddhist, but I'm married to a Presbyterian, and I came to America through a Catholic agency. I worked at one point for the Lutheran and the Episcopal churches, helping refugees from all faiths through Jewish grants and so on and so forth. So I'm quite ecumenical in a way. I still believe in the principle of karma. That's why it came to me to give those words to the students at Yale and to the younger ones, that when you do well, don't forget to do good.
How do you think that the Buddhist culture and the Cambodian cultures that you came from helped you to survive or informed the attitude that you took both when you were escaping and when you arrived in the U.S.?
Well, I think all faiths are important. President George H.W. Bush once said there are nothing more important than faith, family, and friends. And I added, Martha, and I added freedom. So for us, it would be faith, family, friends, and freedom. It's very important to do good things. It's important to lead a good life. And that's how I was brought up by my mother, because my father passed away since I was 9 years old. And so she was both parents to me, and she was the power, strength, and a source of inspiration. She was everything to me. And when I met Martha, she became sort of a replacement to my mother in terms of strength and inspiration. I believe that each of us can do so much, and together we can do much more. And we always learn something from some other people. Under the Khmer Rouge, I learned how to survive from an army sergeant, a fisherman, and a truck driver. Each of them told me separately to never leave the road, stay on the road. What road? It's the road to freedom. So if you leave the road, you can get killed by landmines. If you leave the road, you can get killed by animals when you cross the jungle. So those are words of wisdom that people may not pay attention. But here I was in a situation where I could learn from an army sergeant, a fisherman, and a truck driver. And recently I learned from a fourth grader how to describe my life in one word. She asked me, how do you describe your life in one word? And I never thought of describing my life in one word. I was struggling for a few seconds, and I came up with the word hopeful. So you always learn. In my case, I learned from everyone.
You used the term freedom a moment ago, faith, family, friends, and you add freedom. What does the word freedom mean to you?
It's really very important because that goes back to your early question about the young people. When you are deprived of freedom, when I interacted with younger people, it's very difficult for them to fathom all these difficulties and the hardship that I went through. Because under the Khmer Rouge, you could not leave your village, you could not write to your friend, you cannot see your friends, you cannot do anything without permission. So I asked them, imagine you cannot see your friends, imagine you are not allowed to live with your families, imagine you are forced to work 18 hours a day and you were given only one bowl of rancid soup a day to eat. And that is quite a challenge for young people to absorb, because they would understand it would take a long time. I mean, people whine about the slow internet, about the traffic, about the rain, or about the heat all the time. But when you put this situation into perspective, it's like you never had a bad life, a bad day in your life.
Right. We call it first world problems.
Absolutely. Yeah, those are very good words.
Now, your new book is called Golden State, Love and Conflict in Hostile Lands. Why did you choose the form of a novel for your new book?
I want to call this a sort of a faction. It's a fiction based on facts. I have been lucky to travel to some 115 countries and to interact with different cultures, peoples of all kinds of background, from the poorest to the richest, the strongest and the weakest, and so on and so forth. But I've noticed that the problems remain the same. There are corruption, there are injustice, there are hardship, but there's always love and determination. So this is a story of love, of money, of power, of people that are trying to outdo each other in all kinds of things, from the wealthiest people to the powerful people. But yet, at the end, it was love that determines everything. So that, in a sense, it came from my mother's love also.
Sichuan Siv is former ambassador to the United Nations. He was White House deputy assistant under George H.W. Bush, and he's the author of several books, his memoir Golden Bones, and now his new novel Golden State. He will be speaking and signing books on Tuesday, the 1st of July, at Collected Works Bookstore. and brought to you by Journey Santa Fe. I want to thank you so much for being with us on the Radio Cafe.
Thank you very much for having me.
And we'll look forward to seeing you tomorrow night at Collected Works.